So by giving back more than he takes, Mr. Peary has created the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in his own way. And they're in the soil, and he accesses them with the vegetation, with his well, and the reservoir. So there is the water. There are the rivers.
How deep is that?
Only 12 feet. The next principle of water harvesting is you want to maximize the functions that all your water harvesting strategies attain. Let's get the biggest bang for the buck. So if you've got an earthwork in which a tree is planted and a cistern, place those on the east or west side of your home so they passively shade and cool your home. Not the south side, because you want to retain your passive winter heat and light gain. Don't just plant a shade tree, plant a tree that also produces food, so it's a living pantry. Not just food for you, but also for the wildlife, so it becomes and enhances the local ecosystem. It enhances your view and the beauty, because you potentially have hummingbirds or butterflies coming to visit too. The cistern plus the earthwork double as on-site stormwater control. You greatly reduce the downstream flooding by managing the water on-site. You also enhance the water quality downstream. In Germany, they pay you for doing this because they recognize the value. And actually, I've been really happy to read about what I've heard the city of Los Angeles is doing and the nonprofit, the Tree People, starting to get these strategies across. And then if you set up your cistern system correctly, you can do so in such a way that provides high-grade drinking water delivered to your home free of charge. Okay, back to like an American setting, urban setting. This is my brother and I's home when we bought it in 1994. The public right-of-way between the property and the street, just to the left of the slide, was just bare, and many people used it as a parking lot. We ripped up the asphalt driveway, and in 8 years, after creating many water harvesting basins throughout this strip of land, and then using the dirt we dug out to create raised paths, this is what we got. So this landscape, we did irrigate in the first few years to get it established. Now that it's established, it only gets rainwater. It doesn't even get gray water. It's all native plantings except for a couple drought tolerant exotics of an olive tree and a pomegranate. Okay, so this is all just rainwater and stormwater off the street. Okay, and what are our streets? There are waterways. So let's treat them as such. Let's plant along all our streets with the same type of vegetation you would find along the ephemeral waterways. Not perennial waterways, ephemeral. And then we can cut the curb, as we've done here. I don't have a slide of it, but we cut the curb to allow water into the basins. So the street is literally the passive irrigator of the street trees. And instead of investing in multi-million dollar concrete infrastructure, we're growing green infrastructure of vegetation.
Infrastructure.
And that green infrastructure is not only mitigating storm water and flooding problems, it's enhancing the water quality. It's reducing the heat island effect because it will continue to grow more and canopy over the streets. It's producing food, because these are full of native food producers, like peanut-flavored ironwood seeds, sweet mesquite pods, and so on. And it's enhancing the quality of life. We've created a pocket of the Sonoran Desert within the urban core, because except for the olive and the pomegranate, all of these are species indigenous to the Sonoran Desert and the Tucson Basin. So we only had pigeons in our yard when we moved there. Now the bulk of the pigeons are gone, and we have resident cardinals, curved-billed thrashers, cactus wrens, Gila woodpeckers, hummingbirds, flycatchers, and on and on. So we planted a living almanac right outside our door for anyone to enjoy. And we get to know more neighbors, because now neighbors walk up and down the path. We didn't see them before. All right, so Mr. Peary's growing out all kinds of trees, plants them on contour within earthworks, so they act as an addition to his water harvesting earthworks. All kinds of different trees, a polyculture, not a monoculture. So he's growing out all different kinds of resources, food, timber, domestic animal fodder, and so on. And here he's got a hollowed out log keeping bees. Second to last slide. We're now at the bottom of the watershed, the last snooze check. Snooze check! Okay. I meant to leave that on, sorry. Here are the three hand-dug wells. Here's one of the three reservoirs. And the last thing you'll see is the banana plantation. So this is where the Tigris-Euphrates River surfaced. He dug out this reservoir, and the localized lens of groundwater he created filled up the reservoir. So this is the overflow to his groundwater. And this isn't an 8-month-long drought. He surrounds his reservoir with high plantings, reeds, grasses, trees, and whatnot. So that reduces wind blowing across the water and reduces water loss to evaporation. He is raising fish in that water. He's practicing aquaculture. So his more distant neighbors who are not harvesting the water are literally dying of thirst and hunger in dry times. And Mr. Peary is raising fish. His more distant neighbors could also be raising fish if they would implement these strategies. And there's one other thing I want to just point out with the local geologic conditions. Mr. Peary's got bedrock not that far beneath the surface. So it's made, in some respects, some of this easier than it would be in other areas. The last slide. Here he is in his dry farmed banana plantation. He doesn't irrigate these bananas. He doesn't manually irrigate them. They're watered by the soil moisture that is there because of the water he's harvested in the soil, starting from the top of his watershed and working all the way down. So I've seen plenty of bananas in Southern California, but not dry farm bananas. So when I saw this, I was drop-jawed, and I was in awe of all the work he had done. So he started giggling when he saw how impressed I was. I said, Mr. Peary, how long did it take to do all this? And he said, well, it took about 30 years. And I said, 30 years? That is such a long time. And for the second time that day, Mr. Peary stopped laughing and he slapped me. And he said, Brad, that's life. Life is a slow process. You just have to start. And you start with long and thoughtful observation. You start at the top of your watershed and you work down. You start with small and simple strategies. You start by slowing, spreading, and sinking the flow of water. You start by maximizing your living and organic ground cover. You start by making sure all your strategies do far more than just harvest water. And you start with the last principle, which is the same as the first. Long and thoughtful observation, or said another way, the feedback loop. Because you, along with how you observed the land to see what was going on, before you started the work, you got to see what's going on once you start doing this work. See what's working, see what's not working. Change that which isn't working. Don't leave it. And build on that which is working. Because this is not a static system, this is a living system. And you are another living piece of the greater system. Although we try to ignore that. And you can take the choice. The difference from many of these living organisms is you can make a choice. You can choose to be a steward within that system that enhances the system for yourself and all the other living life forms. And so what I am wanting you all to do is I'm trying to plant seeds of abundance in your heads. And I want you to go forth and to create examples wherever you can, in your backyard, in the public right-of-way, in a community garden, in a park, in a school ground, wherever. Start playing with this. Work it out. When you start getting it going right, build on it so that other people can see it. And as you enhance the micro watershed of your site, that will help enhance the greater watershed of the whole community. And that's the talk. So, I just got a couple quick announcements, and then I'll take a couple questions. If you could just turn the little lever so the fan's still on, but not the bowl. First off, I've got my book for sale, $24.95, no tax, ganga deal. Mr. Peary's story is chapter one, though I build on his story much more in here. I fleshed out the principles. And it's not just Mr. Peary's story. I have many case studies in urban, suburban, and rural contexts to show you in many applications how you can realize the water harvesting principles. In addition, there's a whole chapter dedicated to how you get the biggest bang for the buck, integrated design, how you can set up your cisterns, your earthworks, and the plantings associated with all of them so that your landscape and your design passively cools your home in summer and passively heats it in winter through wise solar design. And how you can enhance erosion control and food production, wildlife habitat, and much more. There's many appendices in here with calculations on sizing tanks and other things. And in addition to the principles I gave you, there's a whole other set of principles specific to harvesting rainwater in tanks or cisterns. And this is the core book or foundation book of a three-part series that I'm writing. The next book that's specifically earthworks and gray water systems comes out in the fall. But the basics of the earthworks and the gray water is covered in here. If you are wanting to get some information for free, you can go to my website, harvestingrainwater.com, and you can take one of these postcards with the website on it. I have a lot of the calculations on that website, and we'll soon have a webpage dedicated to appropriate soaps or gray water systems and financial incentives in various areas. Because in Arizona, in January 1st of 2007, I know we're not in Arizona, but I'm saying this to push your mind and policy here, a tax incentive will kick in of $1,000 per household that'll go towards any rainwater or gray water harvesting system. Any builder that implements it will get a $200 rebate. The other stuff is I'm selling these hot, fashionable items for $15 a piece, 100% cotton, all long sleeve for maximum sun protection, and two different styles, three different colors. I'm self-published. I'm depending on grassroots means to spread the word of the book. So if you all could help spread the word and wear a billboard, that would be great. The other thing is... while the books are on sale for $24.95, if anyone is wanting to make a bulk purchase to sell at schools or events or whatnot, I'm willing to sell the book at half price, $12.50 for bulk orders of six or more. So you can then profit from the distribution because you're helping me out, I'll help you out. I have a few books on gray water systems too. My favorite is the branch drain system. This is all gravity fed, no pumps, no tanks. A little more complicated than some systems to install, but once installed, it is the lowest maintenance system that I'm aware of. And you'll see that washing machine system with the multiple drains. That's in chapter 4 of my book. There's a water storage book for people interested in cistern systems. Also, if you like tonight's talk, you know anyone else that might be into it that's near Pomona or San Juan Capistrano or Idlewild, those are the sites I'm going to next. You can get information on that, plus events in Arizona and New Mexico at harvestingrainwater.com. In addition, I'll be back to Northern California in October to present at the Bioneers Conference, and I'll do some other events around that. That said, and here's a little qualifier. Don't harvest rainwater and earthworks on steep slopes. You guys are in an area prone to mudslides. Don't risk it. Do this in areas of low slopes or in flatter areas, and it's wise to be infiltrating that water and earthworks 10 feet from the foundation of any building, not right against the foundation of the building. If you've got any doubts about anything, you can always contact a geologist as far as, you know, what way the clay lens goes and stuff when you're on a slope site. Okay, so any questions? Yeah?
I mean, this seems, although this takes work, obviously, information, it seems to be definitely doable. I was wondering, why is it not done? And that's question number one, other than ignorance. And question number two is, are there any legislative or zoning reasons why this would not be done more commonly?
First, why it's not being done, I think it's primarily because a lot of our drainage patterns and design came from wetter climates. from back east or London and so on. And I think we're also, it's also because we're in a society that does things because of liability. So we look at flooding as the problem, and we're trying to design for that. But we're ignoring the liability of drought. The other thing is these type of systems, they are more work to install. Because instead of just importing dirt and throwing it on the surface, we have to dig the dirt. And sometimes that dirt's hard. But once it's in place, it's much, much less work at much, much lower costs. And then because it's a new way of doing things, it's that learning curve, and we're resistant to that. But where people see the value and they invest in it, they become real passionate about it. I'm pretty passionate about it. And then as far as what might prevent you from doing it, okay, when you saw how we were harvesting the water in our public right-of-way, and then we were taking street runoff, we made a point of raising the paths so they're as high as the curb. So water can fill up a basin, and then once it's filled, it just backs up on itself. And the inflow is the outflow. We don't have another hole, so we don't create a channel that would be erosive. That way, should the basin fill up, the only overflow is back to the street. It can't go into the adjoining property and flood it. Okay. And the other thing is, because of the weird water rights laws in America, we're not claiming that water, that runoff. If we wanted to get technical, we could pull the runoff from the road, use it for a few years, and say, all right, all that water, that's ours now. First users, it's ours. And that scares the city. And they think, oh, wait a minute. So we keep the water from public streets in the public realm. It's not an issue.
By having that notch in the curb.
Yeah, by having a notch in the curb, but not taking the water into our private property. We keep it in the public right away. Okay. And then there's some areas in Colorado, New Mexico, where rainwater harvesting is called illegal because the mines or Texas has the rights to the surface runoff. So unfortunately, that kind of thinking creates a more eroded watershed that becomes a drier watershed, because runoff is not what fills our rivers and our wells and our springs for continuous flow. Runoff is what contributes to peak flood flows. Okay, it's just a small period of time. So if we can get that water into the soil, move it more slowly, our rivers will run for a longer period of time at more consistent levels, our well levels go up, and so on. So I think they got it wrong. And then the other thing is, they say, if people throw that argument at you and they say you can't harvest that water, we have the rights to it. You say, yeah, you had the rights to pre-development hydrologic conditions. We've now built on it. We've now paved over it. We will keep that runoff on site because it used to stay on site. There was not that runoff. And if you still have to get around it, you don't call it water harvesting. You call it erosion control. And then it's legal. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, we're just doing erosion control.
Right here.
If your plants happen to be a higher elevation than your water sources,
Yeah, glad you asked that. A lot of people have established landscapes, a lot of dense vegetation, and you don't want to start going in and digging basins within the root zone. If you go past the drip edge of the canopy, you might be able to make some basins. But their strategy is you create a raised berm around the perimeter of the landscape, so at least runoff doesn't drain off the landscape. So you may not be able to drain water from the surrounding area into the landscape, but you could perhaps from your roof. And you could, perhaps with the gray water system, you could plant a smaller basin and the bucket within, and then let the roots come and find it. I don't know if that would work for your strategy, your situation. And this is a key thing. Those basins I showed for the gray water, the basins are sized so that they can take several times the peak flow of gray water. That bucket's undersized, but the basin takes it all. Okay, any other questions?
I came late. Did you say where in Africa that kind of was?
Zimbabwe. Svishavane in Zimbabwe. There's, yeah.
Okay.
What do you think the future of Arizona and where you live is going to be, let's say, the next 50 years? I mean, do you think people are going to get a clue, or do you think it's going to, they're going to, after they start washing away, they'll get it?
If we don't start changing stuff, mm-hmm. we're screwed. So I talked with Tucson Water, the active management areas of the water board. We're supposed to have sustainable water by 2025, which basically means we stop pumping the water at a greater rate than it's naturally recharged. At the current rate, there is no way we're going to meet that. And even if you add the Colorado River that we're importing to it, there's no way we're going to meet it. We're going to fall way short. So we have to make some drastic changes. I think that's in part why Arizona takes the lead in the gray water legislation.
You think LA is in the same boat?
Oh, absolutely. It's just that you guys got more political clout and you can pull water from more areas. Mm-hmm. You already have. But yeah, it's the same situation.
How dependent is your locality on pumped water locally, like percentage-wise of water that you use?
It used to be, until we got the Cap Canal, groundwater was the sole water source. And now the authorities are trying to make the Colorado River water, trying to phase that into, so it's at least 50% of even the primary source. And the way we use the Colorado River is we allow it to infiltrate into the soil and then feed the aquifer. But unfortunately, we're polluting the aquifer at the same time. Okay. I'll take one more question if there is one, and then I'll break it off.
You said these strategies are applicable. It's mainly geared for the Southwest, right?
For dry lands, but even in wet areas. In Seattle, Washington, it gets far more rain than we do. They've got an incredible program with their natural drainage systems. Do a web search on C Streets, SEA Streets, Seattle. Incredible stuff where they're harvesting street runoff in adjoining basins and reducing runoff by 98%.
Do they have a filter that water?
The vegetation, the mulch in the soil is what the filter is. So it's a living filter. Maryland is way ahead of the country as far as their rain garden system. And Germany's way ahead of us. So yeah, absolutely you can do this in wetter climates. It's just that my experience is in dry land, so that's why I focused the book. And I want to emphasize, too, that the water harvesting principles, they're universal. All of them should be applied at all sites. And you can't just pick your favorites if you want to get the full effect. You have to apply them all. But as to how you apply the principles, that varies with every site, because every site's unique. And it's not just the site, it's you. You know, what are you willing to do to manage the system? So you got to work it around the people, too. So with that, I don't want to hold people up. I'll cut it off at that. But if anyone else has questions, I'm more than happy to answer them. Just come up to me individually. And we got the books, T-shirts, everything else. And it'll help lighten my load and improve my fuel efficiency in the drive.
I don't know if you wanted to answer this right now, but when you've got water in storage cisterns or whatever and you want to pull it up, you know, against gravity, what kind of pumps do you recommend? Are there solar pumps available?
Yeah, there's a lot of solar pumps you can do.
Uh-huh.
You just go to any place that deals with water pumps, and they can tell you. And if they don't know the solar angle, you can easily look up in the Yellow Pages and see who does solar pumps or just who does solar installs, and they can lead you down that. And Real Goods catalog has stuff like that.
So there are plenty of pumps that don't have to be grid oriented.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Plenty, yeah.
I understand. One last part of that question, which is that I saw a program on national television, whatever network, recently about some guy, Edmonton Geographic also. There's some, I think they're from Holland or whatever, they've got some sort of like little bicycle kind of a thing that they're manufacturing.
Oh, yeah, the bike pumps.
People in Africa.
Yeah.
How do I find out about those? Those are for a big scale situation,
yeah. Yeah, I think the company's name is Outdoor. But all you do is you just put in a web search, bicycle powered pumps, water pumps, and it'll come up. Or the other way you can do it, they actually construct children's playground equipment as pumps, like seesaws and stuff. So you can put in, so put children's playground as water pumps.
Thank you. Incredible talk.
Hopefully.